Let's return to Exodus chapter 6, verse 28, and the story of Moses and Aaron being sent a second time into the presence of Pharaoh, whom I believe is Thutmose III, and telling him it's time to let the Israelites go out of slavery and back to the land of Canaan from which they originally came as a people. So Exodus chapter 6, verse number 28 says, "On the day when he who is spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, he who is said to Moses, 'I am he who is. Tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you.' But Moses said to he who is, 'Behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. How will Pharaoh listen to me?'" And I already shared with you that I believe that this is a phrase that Moses is applying to his own physical speech issue. He either stammers or stutters, or maybe he has a super high-pitched voice that sounds very squeaky, or maybe he's got a really low, gravelly sort of voice that sounds like he needs to clear his throat all the time. Something is going on here that he doesn't feel comfortable speaking. And so we already know that God brought Aaron into the picture to function as Moses' spokesperson. God will speak to Moses, Moses will speak to Aaron, Aaron will speak to the people or to Pharaoh. So chapter 7, that's what God says again. "He who is said to Moses, 'See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet.'" So there's like a simile here, a metaphor, an illustration, that you're going to be the brains of the operation, so to speak, and Aaron's going to be the mouth of the operation. Verse 2, "You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land." But, all right, so we know the mechanism, we know the logistics. Moses will get the information straight from God. He will share it with Aaron, probably in a private setting more often than not. There might be some little sidebar sort of conversations that happen quietly. But Aaron will be the one that expresses it. He will put the words out there. But God is going to remind Moses of something he told him when all this began. Verse 3, "But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you. And then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my host, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am he who is when I stretch out my hand among or against the Egyptians and bring out the people of Israel from among them." So God knows that Pharaoh has a starting point of a hard heart. He doesn't want to give up the Israelites. When you take the number that we see in the book of Numbers, 600,000 plus workers, and you suddenly lose all of that free labor, it's not going to be something that you would want to sign on to. And so he is going to be resistant personally to it. But God needs and wants to break Egypt. He wants to prove to them that putting their trust in all the fake gods and goddesses, the ones that have been probably prompted by fallen angels pretending to have these positions of divine authority. God needs to break that belief system. And it's going to be something that after a few plagues, Pharaoh would be willing to give up and let the Israelis go. Too soon for God to fully get across his point that there is no God but himself. So God is already planning to assist the hardness of Pharaoh's heart and keep him in that negative attitude until God is finished with everything that he wants to accomplish before he brings the Israelis out. So verse 6, Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as he who is commanded them. Now, Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. And so this is one of our chronological indicators as to when all this is occurring. I happen to put a date on this as the winter going into the spring of 1456 BC. And as I already said, I believe Thutmose III is the likely pharaoh of this Exodus period. All right, so let's get into this next meeting with the pharaoh. Verse 8, then he who is said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, prove yourselves by working a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh that it may become a serpent. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as he who is commanded Aaron, to cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. So the last time that we saw this happen specifically was when God taught it to Moses by saying, throw down that stick that's in your hand. He did. It became a cobra. Then he's told to pick it up by the tail. It becomes the stick again. Well, that same stick, which is an almond branch that Moses has been carrying as a shepherd for probably years, is handed off to Aaron because Aaron's the one who says the words. So he's also the one that carries out the action. So in front of Pharaoh, he says, the God who told you to let the Israelis go gives me the power to do this. And he throws the stick down. It turns into a cobra. Verse 11. Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, they became serpents or cobras. Now, this is where we have to talk about whether or not these guys are faking it or whether or not they are tapped into the supernatural. And I'm going to give you my opinion. I believe these Egyptians are tapped into the demonic world. I believe they are tapped into the supernatural, and that what they do here is assisted by the demonic world. And the miracle that they conjure up, where they can throw down what appears to be sticks and they become cobras, is real. Which is why God then comes with a secondary move. Verse 12 continues by saying, but Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. So Aaron throws down his stick, Moses' stick. It becomes a cobra. Pharaoh goes, that's pretty good. Let's see if my guys can do that. He calls them in, and they say, oh yeah, we can do that. So they throw down their sticks. They turn into cobras. Upon which Aaron's staff, which is a cobra, slithers over, grabs hold of, and swallows every last one of those guys' cobras in short order, which means they don't get their sticks back. And then Aaron, of course, will do the next thing. He reaches down, hopefully calmly, grabs the cobra by the tail, picks it up, and it's back to being the stick of power. That's pretty impressive. But, verse 13 reports, still Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them as he who is had said. So because his guys were able to turn their sticks into cobras, he's not impressed. Yeah, sure. Their sticks got eaten. Well, that's the way it happens sometimes. But he will not let the Israelis go just by that miracle. Verse 14. Then he who is said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is going out to the water. The River Nile is very important to the Egyptian people. It is the source of life. It doesn't rain in Egypt. It rains in the headlands of the Nile tributary system and inundates the land of Egypt every year and provides fresh silt in which they plant their crops and grow. And they pump by foot pump or treadmill pumps water out of the Nile as it recedes into their fields to keep their fields wet and well irrigated. So without the Nile, Egypt can't exist. And so several gods are associated with the Nile. And part of the worship involves going out and doing water ceremonies day by day. You remember I told you that I believe that that's what Pharaoh's daughter was doing day by day whenever Moses' parents made the arrangements for Moses' little bulrush boat to be placed in the reeds near where she came to the water to bathe every day. So that's what Pharaoh's up to right now. He's going down to the water of the Nile. And God says, you guys stand on the bank of the Nile to meet him and take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent. And you shall say to him, he who is the God of the Hebrews sent me to you saying, let my people go that they may serve me in the wilderness. But so far you have not obeyed. Thus says he who is, by this you shall know that I am he who is. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile. And then he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, take your staff, stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, their canals, their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood. And they shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, even in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone. Moses and Aaron did as he who is commanded. In the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, he lifted up the staff and struck the waters of the Nile, and all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish in the Nile died, and the Nile stank, so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. There was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Now the question automatically has to be asked, is this literal blood? Or is this one of those things where you use a well-known term to simply associate the color of that thing with what's happening? And I think it's probably that. I think that the waters of the Nile turned blood red. And we know that there are certain algae that bloom that cause a red tide, if you will. And so it may be something exactly like that. And red tides, which is a sudden bloom of this plant matter, it ruins the oxidation of the water, which then kills off the fish. And that's what happens here as well. So it's probably something like that. It's not a natural event. It is a supernatural event that uses certain naturally existing things. And it makes it very difficult to drink this water. It is still something you could drink to get moisture in your body, but it would taste horrendous, and it would feel like you wanted to vomit as you tried to get it down into you. And that's exactly what's described here. Then Pharaoh wants to know, okay, can my guys do this? Verse 22, but the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts. Now, again, instantly people will ask the question, wait a second. If all the water in Egypt was turned bloody red and nasty to drink and killed off the fish, where did these guys get water to use to do their thing? And the answer is explained later by the fact that the Israelis are totally immune to all of the plagues of Egypt. All the water passing through their territory, the places where they live, is clear. The water in their containers and in their wells and in their canals that they use for their own private irrigation systems for their private gardens, all of that water is fine. And it wouldn't have taken very long for the Egyptians to figure that out, and they could have gotten some of this clear water, and then they would have used probably a tie-in to the demonic world to accomplish the same thing. And this then results in the rest of verse 22. So Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them as he who said, had said. And Pharaoh turned and went into his house, and he did not take even this to heart. So he goes back into his palace after having seen his guys take clear water and turn it blood red, and said, basically, I'm not impressed. I'm not letting you go. So this is plague number one on the count of 10, the water into blood. Verse 24, all the Egyptians dug along the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile. So it's going to be that all of the non-Israelis start digging new wells because their current wells are contaminated with this bloody red water. And they dig down into the water table, and apparently that water is unaffected. Verse 25, 7 full days passed after he who is had struck the Nile. I believe that verse 25 tells us how long it took for the bloody red water to go away. And when you think about how long the Nile is, if the entire Nile turned bloody red the moment that Moses and Aaron initiated this plague, then it would have taken probably a good week for all of that contaminated water to drain out of the system and for the fresh water from the headwaters to start showing up in lower Egypt, down where the Pharaoh is. Chapter 8, verse 1. Then he who is said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and say to him, thus says he who is, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that come up into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and your people and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come up on you and on your people and all your servants. And then he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, over the pools, make frogs come up on the land of Egypt. And so Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. So, third meeting, second plague. Moses has Aaron say to Pharaoh, You have another chance to let the people of Israel go. If you don't, this time, God is going to bring frogs on your land, a plague of frogs. Pharaoh doesn't respond appropriately, so Aaron stretches out his hand with the staff of power in it, and out come the frogs from everywhere. So we must have had a whole bunch of polywogs suddenly go through metamorphosis and instantaneously grow up, and there are frogs jumping everywhere in Egypt. Now, they do have a frog goddess. I think her name is Hecate or something like that. They would not have liked the fact that they've got all of these frogs out of control, because that means that their gods are out of control. Now, verse 7 says that the magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Now, how did they do that? We don't know the details, but they must have gone to a frog-free zone. Maybe they went to the edge of Israeli territory with the Pharaoh and did some sort of mumbo-jumbo, some sort of tapping into the spirit world, and they were able to bring frogs up out of what appears to be nothingness. And so once again, Pharaoh thinks, well, yeah, frogs all over the land of Egypt's pretty bad, but apparently my guys could do the same thing, so I'm not going to be impressed. I'm not going to let them go. Verse 8. Then Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, plead with he who is to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go to sacrifice to he who is. So after a while, though, he doesn't like the fact that there's frogs everywhere. I mean, you can't even go to bed without frogs being on you. You can't eat a meal without frogs being in your platter, up on your table. They're everywhere. So he realizes, I got to get rid of these frogs. This is wrong. And so he makes a deal. He says, okay, I will agree to let your people go to sacrifice like you originally asked. Verse 9. Moses said to Pharaoh, be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you and for your servants and for your people that the frogs be cut off from you and your houses and be left only in the Nile. And he said, tomorrow, which is always a shock to me, a surprise. I would have thought he'd want to say right now. But instead he does say, I want them gone by tomorrow morning. So Moses said, be as it is you say, so that you may know that there is no one like he who is our God. The frogs shall go away from you and your houses and your servants and your people. They shall only be left in the Nile. So Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to he who is about the frogs as he'd agreed with Pharaoh. And he who is did according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields, and they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank, which I always have to smile about because I'm sure the Pharaoh had in mind that the frogs would hop away, not that they would all just croak where they were at. And yes, I did do that on purpose. God causes them to all die where they're at, which means there's a lot of dead frog gathering that has to go on. And as the heat of the day proceeds, the place begins to stink of dead frogs. And verse 15 reports, when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them as he who is had said. Notice it says he hardened his heart. This is still him being resistant. So he agrees, and then he reneges on his agreement. He goes back on it. So we move to the next plague. Then he who is said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your staff, strike the dust of the earth so that it will become gnats in all the land of Egypt. And so they did. Gnats, probably not the best translation here. I think the better translation is lice. the little bitty biting bugs. The Egyptians hated these lice. And they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth. There were gnats or lice on men and beasts, and all the dust of the earth became gnats or lice in all the land of Egypt. The Egyptians tried by their secret arts to produce gnats or lice, but they could not. And so there were gnats or lice on men and beasts. And the magicians said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." So that's their way of saying, "We're sorry, sir. This is past us. We can't invoke supernatural abilities of the gods and goddesses to do this exact same thing. This is the finger of their god." And so Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them as he who is had said. Now, I think it's a little difficult to tell whether this is him still hardening his own heart, or is this where God is beginning to do it. It'll be specified shortly, but in this one, I think it's a little bit of a bridge time that we can't be sure. So we've now had three plagues. Verse 20, "He who is said to Moses, 'Rise up early in the morning, present yourself to Pharaoh as he goes out to the water, and say to him, thus says he who is, let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants and your people and into your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians shall be filled with swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen, where my people dwell, so that no swarms of flies shall be there, and you shall know that I am he who is in the midst of the earth, and thus I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall happen." And that's the first time we see the clear distinction. Well, we're out of time. Let's get back to this tomorrow.